Welcome to the Answers for Elders radio show. Meet the trusted experts who will give you straight answers and will help guide you on the path of later life care. Now, here's your host, founder, caregiver, and CEO, Suzanne Newman.
And welcome back, everyone, to Answers for Elders Radio Network. And we are here in our final segment for this series with Stephen Waltar, estate planning attorney in Washington State. And he is a dear friend of mine. And I am so thrilled again to have him on our specialist team because we are adamant that only the cream of the crop and the best in their profession are on our site. And so if you're ever wondering or your interest is piqued about the concepts that we've talked about today, please reach out, get to know Steve. His podcasts are amazing, and certainly we're excited to have him with us. And Steve, welcome back on our final segment for today.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Yeah, well, we're glad you're here too. So we've been talking about this word all through the first three segments, and that's the word probate. What is probate?
The big mysterious word. Everyone wants to avoid probate, but people don't even
know
what it is.
They don't know what it is.
Yeah, so probate's a Latin term that means to prove. And it's essentially prove who died and prove what their assets are. Mm-hmm. So it's this court process to retitle things.
Mm-hmm.
Probate is not caused because you have a will.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not caused because you don't have a will.
Right.
It's really caused because there are things that need retitling. So it's possible someone dies. It's sad when people have their children die. Have it happen a lot. But, you know, if there's one bank account and it says payable on death to parents, and you have a life insurance and it says payable to mom, and you have a 401k payable to dad, there will be no probate.
Right.
But what often happens is people have more than 100,000 of undesignated property, or they have any real property. It could be worth 30 grand. I don't know where you'd find that in our state.
Mm-hmm.
But so probate is there's a probate with a will,
mm-hmm.
intestate. You have a will, you have a plan, and there's called dying intestate. So what actually happens is someone dies and then a bunch of institutions start saying, we need letters testamentary. And then people think that that's something an attorney drafts, but it's not. So they finally go to a lawyer, and then, you know, we look at their assets and we go, oh yeah, clearly they have assets that need retitling. Was there a last will and testament?
Mm-hmm.
And often there is, but even if there's not, there's a process where you need to figure out who are the heirs at law, which would be a spouse and children. And then you basically do a bunch of pleadings. You do a petition, order, oath. If someone's out of state, then you have to have an in-state agent. And basically it used to be, I could walk down to the court, put on a suit and tie. In fact, I've always got a suit and tie in my closet, and I could actually get someone appointed that day. Not so much anymore. That won't work post-COVID.
No.
And it's even, actually it takes longer if you get someone appointed and then they admit the will, but it's this process. Essentially the court will say, you're our appointed person. The letters testamentary says you are the approved of personal rep of the will, or the administrator if there's a will. And that means you got this certificate saying I'm the boss.
Yeah.
That means you could subpoena institutions. You can get medical records. You can open accounts, You also need a new tax number, right? Because when we die, so does our
Social Security number dies. Yeah.
So you get an estate EIN. And
okay.
With those two sheets of paper, essentially, you can set up accounts. And so what they do is they open an account in the estate, but then they have to value things, right? What was the bank account worth and the brokerage account worth? And there's a special form to value what life insurance is worth. It's technical. It's not just the death benefit.
Right.
So you while you're collecting all this stuff, usually you will write a notice in the paper. If you've ever seen, it's usually the Daily Journal of Commerce, not the Seattle Times. But we say, so-and-so's been appointed for the estate of so-and-so. And if you've got a creditor claim or whatever, come forth or you're forever barred.
Right.
And so that creates a four-month wait where creditors could make a claim. They could bring a lawsuit. If they make a claim, you got to say whether you accept it or not, depending on the value. And usually you'll buy time and say no, no, no. And a good practice is, since that's for unknown creditors, those you know about, you got to let them know. So at the 3-month stage, you mail to all of them the copy of the notice to the paper, so that at 4 months, it kind of ends.
Yeah.
And so it'd be foolish to distribute a bunch of property before the first 4 months or 5 months, depending on when this is done, because a creditor claim might try to collect things.
Right.
So probate's the legal process of proving what someone had, what the worth was, who the beneficiaries are, and then retitling.
Right.
So you want to resolve creditor claims, because when someone gets new title, they shouldn't have to look back at, oh, it used to be owned by so-and-so, but I was never paid.
Right. Right.
So it's not, I mean, our state is actually one of the better states. I'd say Texas and us are known for being fairly simple. Once appointed, if you have non-intervention powers, you don't need to get the court's permission to sell the property or to hold a personal effects sale
right.
or a state sale. In California, you got to get permission to do everything.
Right.
Now,
right.
if the estate is kind of almost dropping to insolvency, then the court has to be involved, because they got to decide, well, who gets paid if we can't pay everyone?
Right.
So when you solve all that and you work with the accountant, the investment advisors and what all, you know, eventually you will then distribute things if it's outright. Or you'll set up sub-trusts for minors or grandchildren or special needs children or something.
Exactly, exactly.
And once you get receipts that everything has been done, if it's non-taxable, it was less than $2.193 million in Washington, then you can close it.
Yeah.
But you can't close it until you sell everything or distribute everything and you declare to the court that you've resolved all creditor claims.
Right. That makes sense.
So that's kind of, I mean, so 6 months to a year is kind of a normal, simple probate. And then fee-wise, when I wrote my first book, Smart Estate Planning in Washington, I researched it. And we used to charge 5% of the gross estate. And an attorney in Spokane sued the state bar. Now, that takes some gumption. I said, how can you limit us? What if it's complicated? So now it's based on the time, effort, expertise, you know.
Yeah.
So I would say in general, the smaller town attorneys charge less than the downtown high-rise attorneys. The largest firm in the state, which I will not name, you can research it, they like to charge 2.5%. So it's you don't know if you're going to get a cheap or expensive probate. You don't know how long it's going to be. So it's not like it's this terrible process, but there's a lot of uncertainty and delay, and people don't like that.
And I can imagine if you appoint an executor, and that executor has to deal with all of these issues that are coming up. That's an enormous job. I can only imagine.
Well, I've been the attorney, like, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times, but once Bank of America declined and I had to go clean out the house in the garage, I had to go clean up the car and then list it and sell it and meet people. It's like, man, there's a lot of work for the personal rep.
Exactly. Exactly. And just
and the kids, the other kids don't appreciate it. They don't like it at all. They don't.
No, I'm sure. Well, and it's interesting too, because I always tell people, side note, you know, always handle somebody that's not a beneficiary or not somebody that's one of your heirs to be the executor, because if you do, then that heir is having to deal with everybody else's. And oftentimes that person is picked because they're the most forthright and the most, you know, committed and all these things. Well, what happens is they end up, you know, giving everything away because they want to avoid conflict. And
it's a tough job.
It's just not right. And so I've seen it oftentimes where, you know, I had another friend that they appointed her three kids to work together on her estate. And I just went, oh, that's going to be interesting.
That's tough. I mean, sometimes like, two, but three, oh my gosh. Yeah.
Can you even imagine? And I told her, I said, oh, they'll get along great. I'm going like, now they do. Things, right. People change when people die. Yeah. That's the thing that I've seen too. So obviously living trust is so much better. I mean, I can't even imagine why.
Well, let me summarize what's bad about probate. And then we can talk about alternatives.
Okay. Sorry.
So you forfeit your privacy. I mean, literally, you go downtown, or now you just pay and you go online, you can see famous estates like Jerry Garcia when he died in our state. You can go check it all out, right? You can see Elvis Presley's will. It's out of state. It takes time. That's another problem. Fees, like the attorney may be from 0.5% to 2%, or they may be 300 to 1200 an hour. The executor can also pay or be charged. What else? More than one probate. Like people die here, but they had a timeshare in Hawaii or Florida. Or part of a farm or ranch in Montana. Multiple probates. I don't know. There's just a whole bunch of things. So
Obviously, you know, when you think about it, the privacy factor is huge.
Yeah, I think even if the fees were exactly the same, most people would prefer privacy, right?
Yeah. Well, and especially, let's say, for example, you want different things for your children. Do you want to have the world know that you gave, that you
That's a really disinherited good point. Your... Because in a trust, you're only titled to that portion that shows what you get, not the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
And you will, it's all there.
Yeah, exactly. So that would just be like not a good thing for a lot of people. So Steve, I am so thrilled that you spent this time with us today. And before we stop, I really want to do a whole segment on living trusts. Our time is getting close. But how does, I guess, what can you tell us about trusts that we haven't learned today so that we can build up to another segment on it?
Well, trusts are private. Trusts are flexible. There's way more moving parts. They just have layers of safety nets. And you can do them for singles, for married. You can do married separate. It can hold property out of state, in state. I mean, they're not for everyone, but I have one. And most of my clients north of 2 million will say, yes, we want that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure we're going to have a whole conversation on this in the future. But in the meantime, how do we reach you?
You can give us a call at 425-455-6788. You can always just go to our website, www.waltar.com, or ask for something via email, info@waltar.com.
And everyone, it's waltar.com. I want to make sure that everyone knows that. And Steve, it's been such a delight spending time with you today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
We at Answers for Elders thank you for listening. Did you know that you can discover hundreds of podcasts in our library on senior care? So visit our website and discover our decision guides that will help you also navigate decision making. Find us at answersforelders.com.